Remember when your grandma watched The Member Drive on PBS and joined so she could get that sweet Peter, Paul, and Mary concert on VHS? Now you can do the same thing with the Pop Culture Preservation Society. Each of our episodes is created with the help of listeners like you, and you can become a financial supporter of the PCPS over on patreon.com to help us pay the bills and keep doing what we love. To show our appreciation, we'll send you welcome gifts and give you access to bonus content, like video recordings of our episodes, after-the-episode discussions, and blooper reels from the cutting room floor. Just go to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, type Pop Culture Preservation Society into the search bubble, and choose the level of support that feels right for you. And if you're not able to contribute at this time, remember that listening is the most important form of support you could ever give. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this encore episode devoted to the book Forever by Judy Blume. We're just having a conversation with Carolyn and me today. We're missing Michelle because she is busy. We gave her the day off because she's going to celebrate her birthday on the slopes. On the slopes. She's one of those people now.
She is hitting the slopes. And you guys, we're so proud of her because she just learned how to ski since moving to Colorado. So it's like this winter has
like
been.
Like months ago.
Yes. It's like she started and on the little bunny hill. She wasn't on there very long before she was like, heck with that. I'm going to, you know, kick it up a notch. And she was, I mean, gliding down. I mean, she looks like she goes back and forth and everything.
Back and forth.
Yes. Back and forth. Because sometimes her husband will take video of her. And we're so excited to see that. And it's like, that's legit.
That's like real skiing.
That's like the other side of the mountain when the woman gets like polio and we're all so sad and Beau Bridges and
But this is very on brand for us. The fact that she is learning how to ski in her 50s and it's like her new, I don't want to use the word passion because that's overused, but wouldn't you say that this is Michelle's new thing?
Oh, yeah. I don't think passion, granted it's overused, but it truly fits here.
It fits.
Because she is all in. They go like almost every weekend, which seems so fun. And she really sincerely loves it. It's not like, oh, my husband loves to ski. I guess I'll learn to ski so I could go with him. It is like she'd go without him.
Yeah. And this is not a person who skied in high school or with her kids or anything. This is brand new. This is why we say the 50s are a wonderful time for women.
Right. It is never, ever, ever too late to try that thing. And she is living it. Not only on the slopes when she's swishing down, but in all the little lodges and chalets or whatever they call that. She has tried every drink and everything. She's really living the life.
She's living slopes life.
Yeah.
Hashtag slopes life. Mm-hmm. So we're happy to give you the day off, Michelle. Today we're talking about Forever. And one of the reasons that we're replaying this episode right now is because we're having a very special book club, a virtual book club to discuss the book Forever on May 21st. So get your book and start reading. You probably haven't read it since 1975. And now's your chance to discuss it as an actual grown-up and not a fourth grader like I was when I read it.
You guys, this is going to be, I mean, a dream come true. Mm-hmm. How fun is this going to be? All of us of a certain age talking about the book then and now. It's timeless. I think that it's not going to seem, you know, there might be some dated references, but I don't think it's going to be like, oh, I can't relate at all. Like, I think it's going to be super timeless.
Well, and I think the proof of that is, number one, it has been in print constantly since 1975. You'll hear that in our episode. It's never gone out of print, and it has continuously gotten new covers, including, as of January 2024, Forever has a brand new cover. And it's beautiful. I just love it. It's gorgeous.
Yes, the new cover, one of the things I really loved about it and what I noticed is it harkens back to the original first cover of Judy Blume's Forever. So just so you guys know, I'm not sure of the exact number, but this book has gone through a myriad of different covers over the past.
Like 15, 20. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
And they all, it's really interesting when you look at them because they kind of reflect the times in terms of sometimes like the font, you'll say, oh, that had to be something from the 70s or the way that the images are on the cover. It might be like, oh, they're showing the classic one for us was The Locket,
The locket with Catherine's face in the locket. Exactly. It's a white cover, black font, and the locket with her picture and her long blonde hair blowing back.
Right, and that's the one that I actually thought maybe that was the very first cover, but the first cover was actually on the hardcover, mm-hmm. so I don't remember ever seeing a hardcover of it. I had the paperback, and that's the one I recall, but the original cover had basically a bed with kind of messed up sheets on it and a quilt, like a checkered mm-hmm. quilt on it. A brass bed kind of harkens up to the 70s. Like you could say, oh, yeah, this is 75.
It's kind of a granny quilt, like a patchwork quilt.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the font, you can kind of see right there. Okay,
bubble this is, letters.
Yes, mm-hmm. for sure. And Forever is in really big letters. And then it says a novel by Judy Blume.
I think it's interesting to point out in this new iteration, which is the same for all of her books, the words Judy Blume are much bigger than the actual title of the book.
Right. That's as if people, what I noticed.
They don't even care. Like, give me whatever she's got. I don't care. And the other thing that is really interesting on this brand new cover, right under the word Judy, it says over 4 million copies sold worldwide.
Can you believe that?
Four million.
That, and they keep selling. I mean, obviously, we've redone the cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's also so telling of this book. The cover's been redesigned so many times because it keeps selling. It's a popular book no matter the year. And I noticed that Time Magazine in 2021 named Forever one of the top young adult novels of all time.
Oh my God, you're kidding.
And that was only a couple years ago. So yes, of all time. So I feel, again,
that's quite an honor.
Said it earlier, because the story is, it's timeless. And mm-hmm. that's why I think it's not something that's stuck in the 70s. And if you don't know about the 70s or you weren't around then, you won't get it.
Yeah, it's shockingly, I think you use the word timeless at the top, and we'll talk about this more in the episode too. But the story between these two high school students experiencing sex for the first time is timeless in that it still happens the same way,
yes, right? This is so true.
No matter what the sexual mores are of the time, you have to do it for the first time at some right. point in your life. And she is the only one who wrote about it.
Right, in such a real way. And what's super interesting, and I don't know if you know this, Kristen, but Netflix is going to be doing a new series, an adaptation of Forever, and it's been updated a little in terms of setting.
Oh.
Again, story, timeless.
Okay.
The first time, everybody has to have a first time. In this case, we have two black teenagers.
Oh, interesting.
In L.A. It says it's set in 2018, which I find super interesting. Like, I don't know why 2018.
Right. Is that the past or
when
not
we watch
the
it,
past?
Right. Mm-hmm. That will okay. become
Oh,
that.
Maybe because they wanted to be pre-pandemic.
Oh.
That's what it is.
That's a really mm-hmm. good point.
And people that's still talked face to face.
That's right. They've changed the names. So our Catherine character's name is Keisha.
Okay.
And our Michael's character is Justin.
Okay.
So we've got different names. They're going to have a little bit of a different backstory. Regina King is on board with this. She's directing the pilot.
She's directing it.
Yes.
Good for her.
And she's an executive producer. Judy Blume is on board. She's one of the executive producers of this. So yeah, so she's going to be doing it. And they just cast the two main characters. And if you had asked me a week and a half ago, if I knew either of these actors, I would have told you no. But now I do, because we have our Keisha / Catherine character is being played by the actress Lovie Simone. I wouldn't have known Lovie a week and a half ago, but I just started watching this really good series on Netflix called Manhunt. It's a fictionalized version of the hunt for John Wilkes Booth after he Ooh. Assassinated Abraham Lincoln. It is so good, you guys. And she has a really big role in it. Then that Michael Cooper Jr. is who will be playing Justin / Michael. I don't know what he's in, but he's been in a lot. So,
okay. Well, and these are kids, right? So it makes sense that we may not have heard of them before because they're young people.
Right.
They haven't been around
I'm excited,
for very long.
But,
this is so awesome. I'm excited
yes,
for it too.
Exactly.
And it's a series. It's not a movie.
Correct.
Okay. Because many of you might remember the made-for-TV movie from 1978 starring Stephanie Zimbalist and Dean Butler, also known as Almanzo Wilder. Just putting that out there.
Yes.
Was he Almanzo at the time?
I think think so. Was
when
he maybe
did Almanzo
not?
Come no, to the prairie?
Okay, maybe we'll take all that out. Maybe
I don't think Almanzo didn't come to the prairie till like 1980 or something like that. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, I do remember him in the movie, and I remember thinking he was really cute. And I have a forever memory of him taking off his glasses. And I don't know. And they were like little aviator glasses, 1970s aviator glasses. And I think that was to kiss or something. He had to take off his glasses to kiss.
And whatever happened to Stephanie Zimbalist? Remember her dad was Efren Zimbalist Jr.
Yes. I always want to call her Stephanie Zimbalist Jr., but that's not what
I was
going to
do that too, but that was so wrong.
I know.
So I didn't. That's so funny that you say that. But yeah, I don't know. She was in that, and then she was in a couple other things.
Was she in FBI? Was that a show? No, that was Efren Zimbalist Jr. Hey, stop listening to us now. I'm just making stuff up.
We digress as we often do. I'll do a little Zimbalist rabbit hole research update everyone at a later date. And we'll update you also when the Netflix series is coming out. I think they've just cast it, so they probably haven't even started filming or anything yet. So it'll be a little while, but definitely something to look forward to. And I love how they're adapting it. That's, again, the storyline is that timeless, that we can do that, and it's still going to hit home.
50 years later, they're adapting Judy Blume's books for the small screen or the big screen. It's unbelievable. What a career this woman has had. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. Congratulations. All the congratulations go to Judy Blume. So, in preparation for book club, our virtual book club on May 21st, please enjoy this episode, Judy Blume Forever. Hello, and welcome back to our conversation about Judy Blume. In our last episode, we learned that Judy Blume cannot be confined to a single episode. We were so naive. So after discussing all the subjects her books dealt with, which include divorce, parents fighting, getting a first bra, getting your first period, scoliosis, wet dreams, we decided to save the rest for today. I think we left off with something about touching a penis. And so, here is the conclusion of that conversation. Enjoy. Come on, get happy. Touching a penis.
Well,
you could say,
I mean,
then again,
the girl touching. Yes,
the girl touching. Good. Thank you for the differentiation.
Forever.
Michelle and I both went there. Yes, that would be forever.
Forever. No one will ever forget it.
No. I will never forget that description of that scene. I mean, just them in the bathroom and meeting Ralph and all that. It's just.
And the meet cute.
But the way, that is described. And it's not like all these sentences and words. It's very just kind of cut and dry, but I had the picture perfect in my head.
And it was not romanticized.
No, not at all.
Like, it goes in her hand, and I don't remember the exact words, but it was something like it felt like a little mouse or something. It was not a lovely experience. It was just a very real experience.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm going there, but the description of the pubic hair and how the color, like compared to his hair, like on his regular head.
She was surprised.
Her hair?
Yeah, because didn't he have red hair? And she was surprised that his pubic hair was red.
Yeah. And then hers was like darker than her hair on her head. Like, she was comparing hers to her hair and his. Anyway, it was just like,
Are we supposed to be talking about this? You were not.
I don't know. We'll have an E and I can edit it out, but I just remember all that.
Okay. So naturally, daring to discuss all of these things in books for children made them highly controversial. And she had no intention of being controversial at all. And she was just surprised that people reacted that way because she was just trying to be honest. That's all she was doing. But five of her books are on the American Library Association's list of the 100 most frequently challenged books. And on the if you take the newest edition of Dini and you turn it over in big letters on the back, it says, "Beloved, best-selling, banned." Her books get challenged all the time. Do you remember them being controversial when you were reading them, when you were growing up? Or was that something that went over your head?
Oh, for sure. It went over my head. And to this day, I mean, it makes me sick that they're banned because it's real. She's normalizing real experiences. But as a kid, I don't remember feeling like they should be banned, like feeling shocked like that. I definitely remember being shocked at what was in them. And maybe that's one reason that you kept wanting to read more of them, right? Oh, what's going to be in the next one? What's
all right.
But they were so informative.
You know, and I wonder if I didn't have some friends who weren't allowed or weren't supposed to read them. That was never me, but that just put this other to it. It's like, ooh, like, you know, it just seemed a little more risque. And that's why, you know, we passed mm-hmm. some around or there were the people who owned them. I remember I owned a few of them. I remember always going to B. Dalton Booksellers in the mall and where that section was and going to, Bloom and seeing which copies of what books were there that I didn't have. And then loaning those out to the friends who weren't mm-hmm. Allowed to
they
have them.
Allowed.
Yeah.
She actually tried, there's so many stories of her books getting challenged and banned. She tried to donate Margaret to her children's school. So her own, not a random school, but her children's school. These people have Judy Bloom as one of the moms in their school.
Oh, gosh.
And the principal refused it because he objected to, he thought it was inappropriate for children, particularly the part about periods.
What?
Oh my gosh.
You should see Carolyn's face right now. And she's like, what about the fifth and sixth grade girls in your school?
Exactly.
Who are either having their period or on the verge of getting their period or want to know about what's coming in the next few weeks?
I think I would pull my kids out of that school.
Can you believe it? Can you even believe it? She had one phone call from a mother who said, oh, hello, this is Mrs. So-and-so. Are you the lady that wrote the books about the bras and the periods and all that? And Judy said, yes. And the woman called her a communist and hung up.
What?
Yes.
That's not even, I mean.
You know people, what, though? People are.
And for what she found is that for most people, the thing that was the most objectionable was masturbation. Masturbation was far worse than actual intercourse. You were talking about intercourse, but not masturbation.
People don't like that. Yeah.
No, even though that is a form of safe sex.
Right.
But no, don't talk about it. She said the 80s were really rough. The 70s were actually a really good time for children's books. It was just past the sexual revolution. People were getting very open and honest about things. I mean, think about it. We had TV shows like Love American Style and Love Boat that were devoted solely to getting nookie, right? Your parents might have been hippies or hippie adjacent, and they probably were more honest than you even wanted them to be, right? But the minute Ronald Reagan was elected, she said the next day the censors came out.
Hmm.
And people started knocking on the door and wanting books removed from their children's libraries.
Huh.
And it was a very rough decade. Really hard.
Yikes.
At one point, okay, so here's to you, Rachel Robinson, which came out after we were children. Mm-hmm. That's in the 90s, I do believe. But at the end of the book, one of the characters, his name is Charlie. He's the older brother, and he's saying a toast to the family. And he says, and here's to the whole fucking family. And that's what Charlie would say. She felt very strongly that that is what Charlie would say. And her editor's like, you can't say fucking. But she knew that's what he would say. So they took it to the editorial board. And they're like, if she says that, then we're going to lose all of our book sales or our book club sales. So he said, you can change it to friggin'. Friggin' is okay. And then we'll keep our book club sales. And so she's like, do I make that sacrifice or am I true to what Charlie would say? What do I do? So she's sharing the story with her son, Larry, who is an adult by now. And Larry looks at her and goes, you are Judy Bloom.
What is it? You are Judy fucking Bloom.
You are Judy fucking Bloom. He said, if you can't do it, nobody can do it.
Yeah.
So it stayed. They lost all the book club sales, but Charlie got to be honest. And he said what he needed to say.
I love that story.
Yeah.
Okay, so of course, the most controversial was Forever. So what are the things that you encountered for the very first time reading Forever?
Other than the mouse penis?
The mouse penis in her hand.
I would say, I was so shocked and almost horrified at the, you know, the graphic, real sex scenes. And it was very informative because I could get the kind of info that maybe your mom wouldn't give you, but also the kind of info you would not want your mom to give you.
No.
Or you would never right. want to go ask, because right. usually that was just very, it was, you know, all the feelings and all the, just the complications. And it also, sex wasn't something in that book. It wasn't something that was portrayed as being dirty. It wasn't something, you know, it was normal, like she does with all her books. It was almost normalized, right? Mm-hmm. Even though there was so many complicated feelings and everything, she wanted to have sex with him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a question for sure. It was a big deal, but
right.
she in no way felt, it was very much a personal decision, and she wasn't waiting. She wasn't thinking about God. She wasn't thinking about disappointing her parents. She wasn't mm-mm. thinking about, it was just, do I want to have sex with him? Should I do that? It's a big deal.
Yeah. And it was just I probably read it way too young, because I had an older sister, not as young as my daughter read it. I'll save that story for later. But I just think I was so intrigued, as you would be, by that book, and almost horrified. But I don't remember being like disgusted by it. I think I was shocked, you know, that she was going to do it. But I think more than anything, just it was a book where it was told in such a way that, yeah, it wasn't, the only way I can think that I keep saying is that it didn't seem dirty to me, or it didn't seem wrong or bad. And as I have no idea how old I was, but while it was certainly shocking and I was horrified at it, and it's like I couldn't tear my eyes away from it, mm-hmm. It didn't leave me feeling like it was wrong. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably her point, is that she's trying to show that, you know what? Teenagers have sex. They have been having sex the whole time. This is not something because our society is falling apart.
Right. And I'm going to go, so just be honest here. And my first encounter with Forever was not reading from the front, for the first page all the way to the last page. And mm-hmm. it was literally
yeah.
flipping through and seeing where I saw the word Ralph or penis. And then I would stop and I would read that section. So there was no plot to my my first encounter with Forever. It was truly looking for the, you know, risque parts. But then I did a little bit later go back and I did read the whole thing. And I think it would have been my first encounter. This girl was 17 mm-hmm. and just the discussion of birth control. And she goes and gets some, like she goes to Planned Parenthood. I would have no sooner even known probably how to do that when I was that age.
I would have no idea that you had to do that.
Very adult or mature mm-hmm. In her approach to mm-hmm. to everything, but the whole birth control and taking ownership of that, I just thought was, I mean, that was my first encounter with that you could kind of call the shots, I guess, as the female in the story, mm-hmm. because in my mind, the guy was going to do everything. If there was birth control, it was going to be a condom.
She approached it in such a responsible way. And I feel like, you know, especially the way it all ends is what, when I did have to have the talk about the book with my daughter, who was way too young when she got her hands on it, that's the message that I gave her, was that she made this choice. She felt good about the choice when she made it, but she didn't after, you know, because it didn't end the way she thought it was going to end. And so she had a lot of regret. And so, you know, then that could just kind of be a, you know, a jumping off point, you know, for my daughter, who was only 10, maybe when she discovered the book and read it. And I knew after the fact, and I was like, all right, well, it's not wrong that you read it, you know, but we need to have some, because I bet you have a lot of questions. but you know, of course the way you is, you know, it's a very emotional thing. Look how emotional it was for her.
Yeah.
And I think at the end, she wished she wouldn't have done it. At least that's the way that I always.
Well, at the
that was the takeaway I always
had. Not a romance novel, right? This is something far more than a romance novel, because at the end, it, just like all teenage relationships, except for a handful of them, you don't walk off into the sunset and get married and live happily ever after. That's not how it goes. And so the discussions that I've had with my own kid about what it means to have sex when you're a teenager is that it is an emotional decision, and you have to be prepared for mm-hmm. what if it doesn't go well? And what does it mean for your self-worth and what does it mean for who you are and how you feel about the other, I'm rambling now. You know what I'm talking about. No. I had all the same revelations as you guys about forever with the addition of the scrotum. I'm making a very particular hand motion right now.
You are. She's like drawing her hand down as she's got it in her hand.
She's just been giving a little bag of gold.
Yeah. Kristen, we know what the word means.
Oh, I don't have to demonstrate. Oh,
no, we're good.
And this is a podcast.
That's right. You don't have to be too descriptive about the scrotum. The idea that came into play was just sort of a revelation for me. And the fact that, remember when she put the cologne on his scrotum in a urn? Yeah. So I did learn don't put cologne on the scrotum. So that was very instructive. When I read Forever, also really young, I was probably fourth grade.
What?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. Got passed around, had lots of underlining in it, right? But I did read it cover to cover. And I hid it under my mattress because I think I got it from Allison Houck. Hello, Allison. I'm totally outing Allison Houck now. Is giving me Forever. And my mom found it under my mattress. And the next morning, I'm sitting at the kitchen table eating breakfast, and she slams Forever down on the table, and she said, "Are you reading this trash?" And I said, I don't know what made me be honest, because normally my instinct would be to lie. And I just said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Okay." And just left it there at my plate.
Never had a discussion about it?
No. I mean, I'm sure if my mom was on the podcast right now, she's like, "No, we had a lovely discussion." And I said, "If you ever have any questions, come
back." I taught you what a scrotum was.
Right. That is not how I recall it. It could have been one of those moments where I'm like, "Please stop talking. Please.
Yeah. Oh, I'm quite certain my daughter would say the same thing. Like, "Oh, really? Why did I read this book?" Yeah. Because I was like, "I'm sure you have a lot of questions and I'm here to answer them." And she was probably just going, nope. And I was like, "Well, here, I have some for you." So I'm just going to give you my answers anyway.
How do you feel about scrotums, honey? Okay, so the great irony, of course, is that getting your book banned is great for sales. And it just makes, I mean, that's why they put it on the back of Deanie, because it makes kids really want to see what all the fuss is about. So to all you moms out there who are thinking on marching on your school library to get a book taken out, you're only making the kids read it more. So that certainly adds to the appeal of her books, but it's more than that. The popularity of these books, the enduring popularity of them, begs the question. Well, okay, I should say also that I haven't been in a library for a few years, so I called up my friend Gretchen, who is the library coordinator at our local middle school, and I just wanted to verify, are we still reading Judy Blume? I mean, clearly they're still in print. They don't print books if nobody's buying them, but I just wanted to see if it was the same sort of thing that was going on when we were kids, and she said, absolutely, mostly Margaret and Fudge. Margaret and Fudge are never in. They're always checked out. She said the diehards are still reading Sheila and Blubber and all of the rest, and interestingly enough, there is always a noticeable spike after Banned Books Week, which is end of September. Every year, the American Library Association does a campaign about banned books and why it is that we shouldn't ban books. The library is a place that is free and open. You have the ability as a parent to determine what your children do and do not read, but you don't have the ability to determine what my children do and do not read. Did I say that right? That sounded awkward. So she says that, yes, Judy Blume is still a thing 50 years later. So what is it specifically that makes these books so universally appealing to kids over such a long period of time? Which is, let's just say this, that is the definition of a classic, right? Not, sure. We have lots of classics that nobody reads anymore. Nobody gives a shit about Tom Sawyer. Do you want to read Tom Sawyer?
It's because kids are still 50 years later going through the exact same things.
Oh my God.
They're still going through puberty and divorce, and they're still having to struggle with mental health. And, you know, there's still, there's friendship issues and body image issues and bullying. Kids are still going through the same things that they were going through in the early 70s that she wrote about. And so it's still, I know we keep using this word, but it's so true. She just normalizes it so the reader doesn't feel alone. And so the characters are so relatable and the situations are so relatable.
And it really kind of points out that we think things change, But they don't. Just the things that we want, the way we want children to be, the way we want families to be, that's what changes. But the way things really are really doesn't change. Mm-hmm. One of the things that surprised the hell out of me is she said one reason it was so important for her to put masturbation in her books is because she was so worried that this special place that she had that gave her good feelings, if she had had a book that told her that that was normal, it would have been a huge relief to her. And she said all of her friends had a special place that gave them a good feeling. And this is in the 1940s and 50s. Mm-hmm. It's not any different.
Yeah, I think reading her books was the first time as a reader that I had that me too feeling, like when I could identify with a character on such a level that you're like, yes, I get it. Mm-hmm. And that's, for me personally, one of the reasons I love to read is just knowing that something I thought that made me a little different. Obviously, if it's in a book and a lot of people are reading it, then there must be a lot of other people that feel this way. And that
like
was
you're not alone.
Yeah, exactly.
You're okay.
And that her books were the first time I experienced that feeling, which is a really good feeling to have.
Okay. And so I do have to say that the word masturbation, I did not put the word masturbation together with Deanie's special place when I read it. And still to this day, I don't think that there's a contemporary book that says as much about masturbation as Deanie from 1972 or whatever it was. That is still the book that addresses it to the biggest degree. It makes no sense to me. But anyway, when you read about Deanie's special place that gave her a good feeling, did you know what she was talking about? Or did you think the special place was someplace else?
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember if I did or not.
I thought it was right here.
Your armpit?
I thought it was your armpit. I thought it was her armpit, and that gave her a good feeling.
Hey, it's not a bad feeling.
No, it's nice.
Oh my gosh.
Oh God, that's hilarious.
I don't know.
I don't know. I can't remember if I did or not.
Yeah, I don't remember. Or I don't remember if I blocked it out because I didn't want to think about that about myself. So it's like,
right. Because you'd be so dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I've been trying to analyze this for years because people spend so much time talking about good literature, bad literature, good writing, bad writing. And as three writers, we're constantly looking at what we can do to improve our writing. Right. But one thing that I think is that has made her book so appealing is the simplicity of the writing. Mm-hmm. She doesn't spend a lot of time on descriptive paragraphs. Her sentences are not very complex. There are very few compound sentences. And even the grammar in them, I found I was going through some notes and I found something, a little note in a margin that said grammatical chillaxing, which she just said what children say. She said, me and my friend, me and Carolyn, me and Michelle. Whereas my mom was constantly harping on me, you put your friend first. You always put your friend first. And so when I write, of course, I always put Carolyn and I, Michelle and I. Well, she's like, no, I'm not doing that because that's not how they talk. Mm-hmm. I think that's very appealing. And so when children are reading it, the way that it sounds to them, it is ingested in a very natural form. And it finally, I can't believe it took me this long, but it was in reading Then Again, Maybe I Won't, just yesterday, where it finally dawned on me, this reads like a diary.
Mm.
Huh.
Right? Yeah. It's not complex. It is how a child would talk in their own words. They don't go on and on. It's even in past tense to a certain degree. And it feels so utterly personal. So it's awesome when something that is personal to you is also personal to someone else. All of these books that we're talking about made an impact on us personally, right? But they were a part of the broader culture too. And luckily I have some like-minded friends who will do crazy, crazy things with me, like looking for Sally J. Friedman all over the city of Miami with my friend Colleen. And if you listen to our previous episode, about Christmas, Colleen is the little bitch who threw her Christmas present down the stairs. So in the mid-90s, when we were well into adulthood, Colleen and I drove around the city of Miami, and we were basically using Sally J. Friedman as our guidebook. I don't know. So I had a discussion with Colleen about it this week, and we were able to sort of piece together our memories of that event adventure that we took together. So you can take a listen to it right here.
I feel like we stopped at an elementary school and were convinced that that was the one she went to.
Because we knew that Judy Blume, it wasn't just Sally. We knew that Judy Blume was Sally J.
Exactly.
And so because we knew that Judy Blume had spent a year in Miami without her father, we knew that she had to have chosen certain places in the book. So what I was wondering when I was thinking about this, I'm like, was there an actual like prescribed tour and places? But no, we made this up, didn't we?
Oh, we absolutely did. We absolutely did.
Us.
We were like, that's the apartment right there.
That's
where Sally lived with her brother who had kidney disease that could be healed by the sun.
That's why they went to Miami and had to leave Daddy in New Jersey.
Exactly.
So it must have had a lot to do with what we envisioned in our brains when we were reading the book and then driving around Miami looking for an image that matched the image in our brains.
Exactly.
Oh, we are clever.
Yeah. Very good.
So we went to an elementary school and we took pictures there, and then we found an apartment building and we took pictures there. I mean, we took pictures of things that we were making up. This is hilarious.
Absolutely. Nope. And seriously, I can picture the yellow apartment building that we stood in front of.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like all these pastel colored art deco,
yes.
South Beach, Miami themed things.
I also remember potentially nearly getting hit by a car because we were distracted.
Oh God.
Like maybe crossing a road when we shouldn't have been, like, oh, look at that.
Like the cat, who was the cat that got hit by a car? Was it like Bongo or something? Bingo, Bongo, somebody's cat. It was the beautiful neighbor's cat got Omar.
Omar.
The cat's name was Omar and he got hit by a car and it was very sad. I feel like we just walked around and like pretended we were Sally J on sidewalks. These were women in their 20s. Like we must have been in our late 20s when we were doing this. We have amazing imaginations. I'm kind of impressed with us.
We do. And we're both short and we look really young. So maybe we thought we could pass as Sally. Okay. I think we put hibiscus in our hair. To pretend that we were Esther Williams.
Yes, we did.
I know there are hibiscus all over Miami. I think they were even in my parents' yard.
Oh my! Yes, we totally did. And did we find a pool where Esther Williams would have done her little swimming routine?
We made it up. But yes, in our minds, Esther Williams was at that pool.
We're like, this is the pool. Where they filmed the scene.
Kristen, didn't you get a chance to meet Judy Blume recently? I think I remember you sharing something about that.
Okay, so peak experience for those of you who don't know.
I don't know this story.
Oh my God. Okay.
I'm like sitting on the edge of my chair.
Buckle up, Michelle. So Judy Blume owns a bookstore in Key West, Florida,
right?
Books and Books. And I was there a couple of years ago. And of course, I steer my family to Key West. Like, I'm not telling them why. But I'm like, we're going to go see Judy Blume. Every day I go to the bookstore in hopes of seeing Judy Blume.
Mm-hmm.
Every day she's not there. Finally, on the last day, I go, it's my last opportunity. I'm going to go straight from the beach to Books and Books. And I'm sandy and I'm sweaty and I'm sunburned and I smell bad and I'm all greasy. And I walk in and oh my God, there's Judy Blume.
Oh my God.
And you guys, I had to bite my cheek so that I wouldn't cry. And it's me. And a bunch of little girls. And we're like standing there like clapping our hands like, it's Judy Blume. It's Judy Blume. And so I patiently wait my turn because everyone in the store wants to talk to Judy Blume, right? And so I go up to her and I ask, I'm super nervous. I've got a speech that I've planned and everything. And I'm super nervous. And I ask if I can take a selfie. And she says, no. And she's I'm like, oh, okay. But then she says, but we can't have someone take our picture. So what she means is you can't hold your hand up with your phone and
right.
Take a picture of us. So somebody took our picture and I just look ridiculous because I'm so freaking happy.
And can we please put it on Instagram?
Oh yes, definitely.
Okay.
I'm so freaking happy and I'm sweaty and sandy and sunburned. But this was coinciding to a time when I had written this book that we've talked about before. It's a book for children about a seventh grade girl with a crush on a singer, on a Sean Cassidy style singer, right? And so I was able to go in there. You guys, I vented to Judy Blum and I told her all of the things that editors were telling me. And they were telling me things like, you can't write about crushes in middle grade books. You have to do it in young adult. You can't talk about crushes for 11-year-old girls. You can't say the F word, which I do only one time. One time when she really needed it. It was a really important part of the book. And Judy Blum was incensed for me. She was incensed. And she said, that is just ridiculous. I had my first crush when I was in first grade and his name was Jim. And then she takes me by the hand and she pulls me over to the shelf and she starts pulling down her books and opening them to pages and going, look at this is where she had her crush on him and she has a crush on him here. That is
all my
ridiculous. Then she takes a post-it note and she pulls me behind the register and she's like, okay, tell me your name. She writes my name on a post-it and then she says, tell me the name of your book. And she writes the name of my book on a post-it note. I know.
How do I not know this story?
I know, because I hold it right here in my heart. And I was just going to tell you that we hugged and I left, but you guys, I don't know if that's true. I just felt like I got a hug from her. I don't know if I actually did, but the way she treated me felt like a warm hug. I bet I talked to her for 30 minutes.
Oh,
yeah. She actually works at this bookstore.
What do you think she did with the post-it note?
I don't know. Well, I saw her put it on behind the register. She put it on the little wall behind the register.
Yeah, she wants to make sure when that book comes in to be prominently displayed on one of the front tables.
I was thinking that maybe she would have been like, I'm going to call my agent.
Oh, God. And yeah, that would have been great.
So how did you even bring it up?
I don't know. But I went in there with the idea that I'm not trying to get help. I'm needing to tell her that I have this problem. And if the editors are telling me that I'm doing it wrong, and they're saying that I'm doing something wrong in an arena that I know is true. I know that 11-year-old girls have crushes on people like Sean Cassidy. And now did you ever, this, right?
Did you ever get to gush to her, like how much you mean to me and how much your books meant to me? Or did you even?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I bought about 5 books and I had her sign them all. I told her all about Sally J. I told her everything. Yes. And actually, you guys, it was just like, I have a David Cassidy story that's like this too. But I had to be mindful that there were other people who wanted to talk to her. And I extricated myself. I'm like, Kristen, you have to give someone else a turn. Because she was really focused on me. And aww. I had to let somebody else get their picture taken with Judy Blum.
I'm in complete shock with this story. Also, because for the past 2 months, we've brought up talking about Judy Blum books so many times. And never once were you like, oh, by the way, met her. She signed some books for me.
She's my friend. We're friends now. She's my bridesmaid.
Wow. That's fantastic.
I know.
That's really just a tremendous story.
I know. Isn't it great? And I feel like, although this isn't true, this is in my mind, I feel like we have this special relationship and I continue to order books from Books and Books. If you naturally are looking for an alternative online book buying experience, Books and Books in Key West, Florida is fantastic. They have a really great, easy, intuitive ordering platform. They have a great newsletter with great book recommendations. There's a letter from Judy that comes out and she gives her book recommendations. So I recently ordered the newest paperback of Margaret from Books and Books, naturally. And you guys, they called me. I just want everybody to buy their books there. The people at Books and Books called me and said, oh, we noticed that you ordered Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Would you like Judy to sign it? So of course I said, yes. How nice of them to call me. But so they're like, okay, so she's quarantining with her daughter in Massachusetts. So we're going to send it to Judy in Massachusetts and she'll sign it. And then she'll send it back to the store and then we'll send it to you.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Jesus, Kristen, you should have led with this story. This is amazing. You know what? This is a good little treat for the listeners who have stuck with us this long.
I know. This is that's absolutely true because it's very difficult to keep this conversation to a reasonable amount of time because it's like when you were 12 and you're at the slumber party and what are you talking about? You're talking about when is everybody going to get their period? Who's got their period and who doesn't? And we're still having the same conversation today, you guys, except we're doing it in reverse. Instead of saying, did you get your period? We're saying, are you still having your period?
Oh, where's the line?
I know. So it's not possible to bring a conversation like this to a natural end because girls and women need each other. We continue to need each other, especially in times like this. And we're still trying to make sure that we're normal. We're still excited for the changes that are coming, right? We are on the verge of it, the three of us. I'm looking at, I'm looking at Carolyn, right?
Oh, so yeah.
I just have to end it here. And I will do so by sharing with you some of the rejections that Judy Blume received from editors when she first started submitting her books, just to show you that people don't know Jack. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Yeah.
Dear Judy, unfortunately, I'm not sure this is a children's story. Parents would dig the humor, but not children.
Do we know what book that's for?
Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
What?
I know. Dear Judy, I'm sure you're a really nice girl, but get out your hanky and prepare to cry because you just can't write.
What?
That's a little harsh.
I know.
Yes.
Dear Judy, you're a nice girl, but you'll never be a writer.
What are they doing calling her a girl?
Oh, yeah. Two of them called her a nice girl.
Yes.
Of course, those were men, right?
Of course.
Right. Of course. Oh my goodness. Thank you, Judy Blume, for not quitting. And thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank you all so much. We do have one favor to ask you, though. If you could leave us a review and a rating and maybe even subscribe to our podcast, we would be so grateful. When you're just starting out, you need all the love and support you can get. And we are so appreciative of yours.
And we hope that you're following along on social media. We're having so much fun sharing nostalgic memories with all of you. Just search Pop Culture Preservation Society and check out our website at poppreservationists.com to learn more about us and to get access to all of our past episodes. And there's a whole bunch of other fun stuff on there too.
Yeah, past episodes. And we want you to come join us next week for our future episode, which will be sad songs from the 70s. Hope to see you then.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast courtesy of Janet, Chrissy, and Jack Tripper. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
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 Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to me, the Crushologist, and Carolyn and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, I guess there's always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded at Modern Well, a woman-centered co-working space in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.
We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.